Raised on D&D Podcast helps to enrich your family's gaming experience by bringing you interviews with parents, educators, game designers, and influencers. Join us as we delve into the many ways that tabletop role-playing games inspire creativity, develop communication skills, and create long-lasting bonds among players. Your host has been an avid gamer since childhood, and now his kids are being raised on D&D. Here is your host, Nick Cardarelli.
Welcome back, gamers. I'm your host, Nick Cardarelli, and this is Raised on D&D. My next guests are from Seattle, Washington. They've been therapeutic game masters for over a decade. They are co-founders and co-executive directors of Game to Grow and have recently launched Critical Core, a beginner's box for intentional role-playing. Please welcome Adam Davis and Adam Johns. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Thanks so much for having us.
Hey, I'm so thanks excited for to be being here on the show. Man, I'm so excited. I got in on the Kickstarter for Critical Core, and I was so, when I got that box in the mail, it was like Christmas. We're going to get all into that. But before we do, take us back to your very first experience with tabletop role playing games. Who wants to go first, Adam Johns or Adam Davis?
Oh, man. My first experience with it was D&D. It was second edition D&D. I had recently moved to Arizona, to Flagstaff, Arizona, from Pennsylvania. It was a long move. I suddenly had no friends, and there were these boys that were just down the street that were the same age myself and my younger brother, and we started going over to their house and spending time with them and you know whatever fun things we could find to do together. But they had a player's handbook of the second edition AD&D, and they said, hey, we should play this, and then we just started jumping in. And I'll tell you that I think we played for a year before we learned any real rules on how to play the game. It was like opening the book and like reading spells or looking at pictures and just being like, yeah, I'm a druid. I played a lot of paladins because we all thought paladins were the most powerful character because they can cast spells and wear heavy armor and use any weapon. And so it was just blatantly the most powerful character until we actually started reading rules and we were like, I don't think they can cast those wizard spells. I think they have to cast all those priest ones and they're not very good at it. But all of our stories all had kind of a similar theme in line, which was like, there's an evil king and you have to destroy the evil king and you barge into his castle and then he surprises you and you wind up in the jail at the bottom of his castle and you break out and then you overthrow the evil king. That was like the plot. I think we did that like 10 times or something. But it was just filled with magic and it was filled with storytelling. And it was us sitting in their like TV room, sitting on couches with clipboards and pieces of paper and one set of dice. We only had one set of dice that was in one of those tubes that was all the dice came in at the time. And it just filled my imagination. I never imagined I'd be where I am now as a result of those experiences, but they definitely filled my childhood.
And Adam Johns, about how old were you when you first started?
Oh man, so that would have been, I was 10, I think.
Wow.
First started right around 10 or 11.
That is awesome. Adam Davis, how about you?
So I actually grew up in the dusty Mexican borderlands of South Texas, and as a small town. And it was my older brother, Justin, who's 4 years older than me. He was sort of the classic tale of him saying, check this out. He had the player's handbook. So I actually learned how to play sort of informally. It was sort of like Johns was talking about, like, we looked at a lot of pictures. We made up a lot of stories. I did a similar thing. Small town, there's not a lot to do besides go to the mall and hang out at the bookstore and look through the Encyclopedia Magica, right?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. It was literally Walden books. It was that and look at magic cards, pretty much. That's what we did on the weekends. And I learned how to play at Boy Scout camp. That was like my introduction was rural Boy Scout camp, South Texas, a little bit of the satanic panic still going on. So we kind of kept it hush hush at Boy Scout camp, but that was my story. I didn't really get into playing like by the rules until like middle school age. That was when I finally like read the books and I started reading like Dragonlance books and, you know, writing my own fanfic about Caramon Magier and Raistlin Magier and everything. And that was really when I got really into it. And I had a friend, similar, like sort of misfit outcast like myself. And we went over and played our own sort of homebrew like every other weekend for a long time. That was my upbringing in D&D.
That is fantastic. Now, you're both fathers, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Adam Davis, how many children do you have and how old are they?
I have one and she is 7 months old today.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. I'm still in the counting months phase of
fathering. That's right. It's a wonderful time. Yeah. It's a wonderful time. Don't blink. You'll miss it.
And that's what I hear.
Adam Johns, how many children do you have and how old are they?
I have one daughter. She is about to turn 5 next month.
Fantastic. So
she's right at this amazing age of creativity and learning and really kind of saying hilarious stuff too.
That is awesome. Mine are quite a bit older. I've got a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 14-year-old. And so they're all little stair steps about 17 months apart. And we started playing tabletop role-playing games together one afternoon when I was left alone with all three of them by myself. And I had just listened to all the Wiggles I could take. And so I thought, what can I do that will keep all three of their attentions? And at the time, they were 4, 3, 2.5. So they were teeny tiny. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try it. I got out the maps, the miniatures, the DM screen. I gave them character sheets. Only one of them could really read at the time. I had to get enlarged dice out for the youngest one, but sat down with them. And to my amazement, they held their attention for almost 40, 45 minutes. And I was just like, whew. But they were hooked. And now you guys are starting that journey together with your families. But you also game not only together, but you game with your spouses. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. We've done some pretty deep gaming all together, some long campaigns with our spouses and some friends of ours, and have had some pretty amazing experiences, I would say, over the course of all that. Getting into sometimes emotional stuff or sometimes just like really goofy, fun experiences throughout that.
How did your spouses come to the table? Were they already gamers when you met them, or did you introduce them to tabletop role-playing games? Adam Johns can tackle this first.
Yeah. My wife was kind of a closet gamer when I met her. I would say, I mean, she wasn't a tabletop RPG gamer yet. She was, you know, into she would play Rock Band, and she'd play, fun platforming games and Mario games and stuff like that. A lot of video game stuff. And she was a reasonably avid board gamer. But playing RPGs with me was the first time she'd really stepped into the sort of tabletop RPG world. And she took to it really quickly. She absolutely comes from a theater background as well. So she jumped right in and doing voices and being goofy and making up stories, and it keyed into something she's clearly very good at without ever having actually stepped into that world. So she took to it very quickly.
She's also a great game master. I played in her games too.
Yeah. So,
wow.
You know, it's hard to make that transition from player to game master. She took to that really well too.
And Adam Davis, how about your wife?
My wife is not a gamer, and would say she's not a gamer, but she's also immensely creative and is a natural storyteller. So as much as she says she's not a gamer, when we get her seated and get her comfortable, she's like, has like, because she doesn't have like, she didn't grow up like going through dungeons and being like, I better check for traps. Like, she doesn't have any of that. She's like, yeah, so curious about where the story is going and where the world is going and wanting to know more about the characters. And when Adam and his wife, Alyssa, both are game masters, like, they're amazing improvisers. So when Kristen, my wife, is like, I want to ask this question. Like, the game masters are just so responsive, which is just like a wonderful storytelling experience. But she had never played and was kind of even resistant to playing when we were first getting started. She was like, I don't know if I know all the rules. And I was like, I don't really either. It's okay. I've been doing this for a decade and I still make up a lot of rules as I go. But I'll never forget. We were, she's from San Francisco originally. We were driving up to Seattle when she moved up here, and we were just playing like a storytelling game in the car. It was like a It was like one of those improv games where you're like, sometimes you say yes and sometimes you say no and sometimes you say maybe, depending. And we were just making up a story, and she was just didn't know that she was totally creating a story. We did, because, you know, it's a 15-hour road trip from San Francisco to Seattle. So we were like killing time in the car. And she was like, just didn't realize that she was making up this whole story herself. And I was like, I'm going to get you into the table. We're going to play some D&D together. And she's super fun to play with now.
She's actually such a joy to play with, because she's not a gamer, and the tropes don't mean anything to her. She jumps right in with like a real creativity for problem solving stuff that nobody else thinks of, and some of the best like characterizations and questions that come up because she's not as steeped in all of this as well, certainly as Adam and I are.
Yeah.
that is amazing. I introduced my wife to tabletop role playing games, but again, she was playing video games, Ninja Gaiden, things like that, and always loved fantasy, sci-fi, big time reader, super creative, also in theater. And so when we finally sat down and started gaming, and then what I love about gaming with people that have never, you said, aren't familiar with the tropes, is they don't have these preset notions of what we're supposed to do. My wife would get frustrated. She'd be like, we were hired to guard the caravan. Why are we running off after the treasure map if we're supposed to be guarding the caravan, right? Like the whole, like, it's a red herring, like adventure hook was like lost, right? She's like, we got to do the job, you know? So, but it made for interesting player interaction and trying to convince her character that it was okay to leave the caravan for just a little bit for us to do this side quest, you know, those kind of things. So, and it's kind of grown from there. Now, you guys have come together and you've created something amazing. And the first thing that I want us to talk about is I want you to tell the folks who are listening who aren't familiar, and I know lots of your fans are listening already, but just very quickly, let us know what Game to Grow is, what GameToGrow.org does, and how you two came up with this idea and how it all came together.
One of the first things I like to say when people credit us for making this up is we didn't invent this. This idea, right, of collective storytelling, of gathering together, be it D&D or whatever else, like for personal growth and change, I think that's in the human DNA. So as much as we invented it, we launched Game to Grow, like this concept that we've tapped into is something that everybody is really capable of tapping into. So Adam and I met in grad school. We were at Antioch University, Seattle. I was studying drama therapy at the time. Adam Johns was studying couple and family therapy, and we were actually in a class. We met the sort of story where it all begins. We were in a class talking about culture and how culture can be, you know, can impact the therapy, you know, setting. And we both brought in artifacts of our personal culture. I think we both brought in dice, as like we come from a geek and gamer culture, and we like looked each other across the room and we're like, okay, two Adams, two people who understand dice. All right. Like we're going to be friends. We can tell. And then shortly around that time, I was getting some experience as a, you know, emerging drama therapist. And I was working at a program that was really geared towards youth who needed some social support. So it was an improv class in a Dungeons and Dragons group. And at the time it was really like unstructured, kind of a place where kids who needed some supervision could go play some D&D. And I did that as a way to get some extra hours for my program, and then realized like, oh man, this Dungeons and Dragons and this improv, when you take it from a drama therapy lens, are like really kind of an opportunity to provide like intentional role play. And I remember like my co-facilitator at the time stepped away, and so we had a space, and I was like, I gotta get Adam in here. This is the perfect match, like that dice from that day in class. So Adam came in as the co-facilitator, and then we were like really understanding how what we were doing wasn't just like rolling dice and, you know, playing a game. We were working on something that was tapping into something that was really magical. There's a lot of the kids that were in this program had never really had a safe and supportive social group before, but now we're using the RPGs to create that space. And there were some parents who were like, my kid, this is the only time my kid looks forward to leaving the house, right? Like, this is the only time they're in a place where they want to be around other people. And so Adam and I knew we were onto something big. And so we left that program, started a little two-person organization here in Seattle for a while. We got up to a couple groups a week. I was a full-time classroom teacher at the time. And Adam was a full-time therapist in private practice. So we were like, this was a passion project, really, you know, on top of our very stressful full-time jobs. And then we realized like something had to change. We needed to make this bigger than what we could do as it was our, you know, our nighttime jobs, right? We knew we were onto something big. And that was when we really decided we were going to launch Game2Grow.
And I think one of the things that was, you know, particularly amazing about that whole period of time was that Adam and I were big into other geek communities and things like that. And we started giving talks at conference. We started going to comic conventions and penny arcade expos and academic conferences and spaces as well, kind of just talking about, hey, here's what we're seeing. We're running these groups using D&D to build a community, to build stronger social bonds between kids and teens. And we're seeing this be like a really effective methodology. And as we went out and we talked in all these places, we would go, hey, who out there is also interested in this? And we would see parents and teachers and therapists not only interested in it, but some of them doing it already. Some of them in their own states, in their own places, already having come to, you know, a similar conclusion about, yeah, this is a powerful tool for growth, a powerful tool for bringing people together. And it was such an amazing experience to be going out and giving talks about what our experiences are and then hearing about the experiences from other sometimes professionals and sometimes just, you know, passionate parents that really wanted to bring the game into their home, into their kids' lives in the way that it helped impact them. And it was just so incredible to hear all that. When we transitioned from being a little tiny for-profit company into being a nonprofit company, it was really about wanting to create something much larger than what could be just us. You know, the for-profit was this space that it was just Adam and I running this little company. The nonprofit is a mission. It is a message to families. It's a message to people. It's a message to people who design games and a message to people who use them. That the games have a power, have an opportunity for positive impact in the world, especially when you use it with an intention or use it with a reflection to focus on that positive impact. And so that's really where the foundation of Game2Grow well grew from, I guess.
One of the things that I love about your story of how you've come together is you see this opportunity, but also you see this need. When my wife and I decided that we were going to start playing tabletop, not only as a inexpensive hobby for the family, but also we recognized the benefits of it was we had these three young people that were all very close in age. And of course, as parents, you realize that each child is unique and different. And we wanted something that would help them create bonds, not only with each other as siblings, but also with us as parents. And the bonds that we forged around the game table with friends, coworkers, acquaintances that blossomed into lifelong friendships was something that we wanted for our family. And one of the phrases that you guys use that I absolutely love is intentional role-playing. And it's role-playing with a purpose, with a reason. And we looked at that and we recognized not only the social aspects of it and the self-esteem building, the learning how to communicate with others, things like that, and the bonding experience. But on top of that, tabletop role-playing games almost always creates a love for learning, a curiosity about things, whether it's how heavy is armor, how do you make chainmail, you know, those kind of things. That's the kind of spark of creativity with all the many aspects of tabletop role-playing games when it comes to cartography and painting miniatures and writing stories and story structure, all of those things. And you're absolutely right in the fact that you're finding out that professionals, from therapists like yourselves to educators to parents, were tapping into that potential. And only really now are people catching up to the fact that tabletop role-playing games provides not only entertainment, but also if done with a guide, it can be done for the betterment of the players, and especially for young people and for children. Tell us how Critical Core, that idea, came about.
Well, Critical Core was actually an extension of that same thing Adam was talking about earlier, right? This mission. When we were a small two-person company, we had, you know, a couple of groups a week we could run before we hit a limit of how many youth we could serve in the greater Seattle area. So Game to Grow was an extension of that. We could have support from the community. We could hire staff. So we hired some local staff here in the Seattle area. We expanded the number of programs we could serve. We expanded to Tacoma. So we had Bellevue, Kirkland, Seattle, and Tacoma, all these geographic regions we could serve, but that still wasn't as far as we could potentially go. So Adam and I were keynote presenters at the Washington Association of Marriage and Family Therapy, talking about the intentional application of tabletop role-playing games. And we talked about our theory, the Game to Grow method, right? And so many therapists, an auditorium full of therapists, were like, yes, I want to do that. I want to do that thing that you're talking about. I want to use systematic and intentional role-play. Where should I get started? And for someone who's never played tabletop role-playing games before, but wants to get into it, there wasn't an on-ramp. It was like, I guess you should go to a game store and play in a delve there and then get a chance to feel how the game works. And then maybe buy the player's handbook and play for a little bit longer and then buy the game master's guide. And then maybe over the course of time, maybe a couple of years from now, you'll be able to play with your patients or your clients. So we knew, you know, from having these conversations with therapists and teachers, et cetera, that we needed to provide that on-ramp, right? Like the things we could do with a game like Dungeons and Dragons itself wasn't essential. It was gathering around a table. It was having a simple structure we could use to help people play the game and get those benefits out of it. And that's really from that is the sort of nidus of Critical Core, right? It was that idea, that need to go even farther than where we could go. Because Game to Grow's mission, it's not just to serve people directly, right? Our vision really is a game in every school, a game in every hospital, and a game in every home. We want that to be the vision of Game to Grow. So Critical Core was actually like a passion project that existed before us also. We were emailed by Virginia Spielman, who is an occupational therapist originally based out of Hong Kong. And they had this idea to build this tool that could be used by therapists, it could be used by parents, it could be used by teachers. And they knew they were tapping into something. Adam had mentioned earlier, there's people who had tapped into this idea that tabletop role-playing games could be this vessel. And so they had this idea and realized that they didn't have the experience. So they reached out to us. And so Critical Core was built off of an international partnership between Adam and myself, between Virginia Spielman and Gavin Chang, who's, you know, based out of Hong Kong. And so we had this collaboration that built that Kickstarter was actually with the help of McGarry Bowen, which is an ad agency out of Hong Kong, who helped us do the design work. Gavin's brilliance is behind that box that you got in the mail from that Kickstarter. So wow. Really want to give credit where credit is due there, that Adam and I had a whole lot of passion and intensity. But the catalyst for that was an email from Virginia Spielman that she sent out saying, there's this idea, and I want to be involved with y'all on making this thing happen, right? We wanted to serve the autistic community in Greater China. Was originally the original like inspiration for this. So we built Critical Core to serve not just like our population in Seattle, right? This is an international phenomenon now, to get tabletop role playing games out into the stratosphere. I want to see Critical Core in space.
Phenomenal. The tool itself of Critical Core could help children on the autism spectrum with communication skills, with confidence, with learning those nuances in verbal and nonverbal communication. As a communications major myself, I was really drawn to the Kickstarter for Critical Core because I saw what a great potential it was. I was just so amazed opening the box and seeing what was inside and how it could help. And so what sets Critical Core apart from other tabletop role-playing games, and how it specifically helps children on the autism spectrum?
What makes Critical Core special is a broad a broad answer on that, and I'll let John speak to that as he was a lead rules designer for Critical Core. I think one of the things that sets Critical Core apart in general is that it's a play-based and relationship-based support program, right? Our goal is not to address a deficiency. Our goal is not to say, here's what a deficit is in a young person with autism, and then how we're going to make them fit in, right? That's not our goal at all. And I think that's a really important part of the mission of Critical Core, is to be a place where young people can build social confidence, right? To have that connection, that helping them build that capacity to connect with other people, that's not looking at sort of a direct instruction kind of skills-based program. Like, we do lots of consultations and training now, and I've done consultations with people who are in schools and their goal is to support young people, autistic or otherwise, build some social skills, right? Social skills. And oftentimes the way of teaching that is very deficit based. It's very, they're trying to check a box to get a discrete behavior to happen. And I had this one organization in Australia had reached out to get some support from us, and they told a sort of horror story about how they were instructed to teach social skills. And I'm air quoting this, teaching social skills to these kids by having the kids all sit in rows facing forward. And then someone comes in from the hallway and they're practicing their social scripts. So they say, hello, how are you today? And then they don't look at the person and get a response. They look at their teacher to see if they did it right. And that is how these young people were, you know, by well-meaning teachers, well-meaning programs, were helping these kids fit in. And I'm air quoting that too, like helping them to engage in the right scripts. And so,
wow.
Critical Core is really built as an alternative to that kind of program, that really we want to celebrate the authentic and, you know, unique personalities of every single one of our participants, right? And we want that to be something that is really invited to shine through. If our players want to be who they are, we want to celebrate that and encourage them to connect, not in the ways that we want them to connect, but to connect as much as in the way that they want to connect. That's really a core principle behind Critical Core. Adam, you can take that. I just had to respond to that. It's the guiding very principle well behind Critical Core is yeah. So
to what Adam said, like, that philosophy is at the root, it is at the core of everything we designed with Critical Core. I mean, all of the teachings that we put into Critical Core were all things that we were doing in our groups that we were running. They were the ways that we were training our new facilitators that were coming on to Game to Grow. They just were the foundation of all of that, with the through line of really building a play oriented and welcoming, safe atmosphere for building and testing social interaction, and really aiming towards the strength of building people together. And when we designed the rules, we wanted to do the same thing, because one of the pieces that we realized as we were designing it, as we were talking about it, was that it wasn't just the participants at the table. It was the game master who needed guidance. Some of that is because we wanted to design something that a new game master could jump into, that somebody who really has never even seen a role-playing game before, which is, you know, as you know, an ambitious goal to hand someone a book they can learn or a kit or something and say, this is a complex thing to learn. I want this is something that can teach that to you. But it was more than that. We also wanted to help game masters game the way we game. And that was about providing the right supports at the right time for game masters. So we made some very intentional choices in the design of Critical, like, for instance, we didn't add in any character construction design. So in other words, the players start with a pre-made character, they can jump right in and play. And part of the reason for that was we knew from our groups and our experiences that we would get a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old coming and joining the group. And character creation was not a way to get them interested. It was not a way to get them engaged in the game. We needed to hand them a character sheet and say, what's your character's name? Great. Now you're playing the game, and get them immediately jumping right in. And they could continue to create depth, to create new ideas. And as they learn the game better, they might say, oh, I want to customize my character a little bit more. I want to make some more choices. And we would always welcome that. But that first day, that first experience, character creation was only meaningful for a player who already knew what the game was and already knew how the game played. Yes. And we didn't just remove that level of character creation, that sort of mechanical portion of character creation from the game for the player. We did that for the game master because we didn't want the game master who was sitting down, who was playing for the very first time, to have to navigate how to lead another player into how do you make choices about, you know, what's more important, strength or dexterity, or how do you make choices about which spells to pick and things like that. We wanted to help the game master help the player. And all the other portions of Critical Core from a rules perspective are designed with the same thing in mind. We want to support the game master. And it isn't just supporting the game master in playing the game now. It is supporting the game master in their evolution as a game master to eventually get to a place where they can transition to another game, where they can transition to other systems, because now they have built the skills necessary for that. So all the stuff that goes into the unique module design, which we could talk a lot more about, and the stripped down, you know, rule sets, and the choice to make it based in fifth edition, all of those based on the OGL from fifth edition, all those choices were all designed with the intention of let's have the game master build the skills necessary for delivering an amazing game master experience.
All of those things for the Dungeon Master packages it beautifully. Honestly, it is a work of art. And when I'm talking about art, I'm just looking here at my copy of Critical Core, and it is gorgeous. From the modules to the guides, everything is so well laid out. The illustrations are amazing. That new game smell, the colorful dice sets that came with it. I just loved everything about it. I just couldn't get enough. I support a lot of Kickstarters, but I can't remember one that I was this excited about and was this happy with what I got as a result of that support. And I can't be more genuine about that. Now, we're getting close to the holiday season, and I hope a lot of folks are going to get Critical Core for their families. But you guys are organizing Critical Core plays in children's hospitals now. Is that true?
Yes, we actually, Critical Core is so easy to play, and we don't have a player's handbook at all, right? Part of our mission is to have the players not looking into a rule book, but looking at each other. So we have been using Critical Core in our hospital program. We launched it after COVID put our entire program virtual. We also realized that we could reach other communities that were restricted from social access. So there was a lot of hospitals serve youth, and they used to have playrooms. They used to have space where the kids could connect with visitors who came. But when COVID shut down a lot of our country and a lot of the world, a lot of those kids who were already stuck in a hospital were then even more socially isolated. So what we could do is we can connect remotely with children's hospitals, and kids can be in their hospital beds. They can be sitting in their hospital bed with an iPad in front of them and some dice and a character sheet. That's all that they need to play. We can teach the game right there. There is no player's handbook, so they're not missing anything, right? And so we were able to bring Critical Core into the San Antonio Methodist Children's Hospital, because we have a good friend and colleague who is the patient tech specialist there. So we were able to connect. It's my hometown, San Antonio, so it was really exciting to be able to serve my hometown. And we were building a pilot program there, and we had kids, you know, there's a lot of programs that come and try to provide some social connection for kids or provide some fun for kids. And we were doing something that was hitting both of those in a way where the kids were still maintaining their level of removal from contagion, right? They were not impacting other people. We didn't have to be there in their room. And we had feedback from some of these players. It was like, and their families, they were like, I haven't seen my kid smile. He's been here for 3 weeks and I haven't seen him smile in 3 weeks. But now, because of Critical Core, they're given this opportunity to connect with other kids and other kids who are in similar situations. All the kids in the hospital program are in hospitals. So they're seeing other kids who are also in similar situations, also in hospital beds, sometimes connected to an IV or an oxygen mask, and they know they're not alone. And that is a big part of what we're doing with our hospital program. So we've been in the San Antonio Methodist Children's Hospital since last year. We recently got into the Seattle Children's Hospital, doing a similar remote programs there. And it is like really tapping into something that's really special and really important. And I think Critical Core is really uniquely suited for that, because we have, and it's an interesting thing to see the demographics in San Antonio versus Seattle. Seattle's got a bunch of geeks and gamers. And so the kids are like, oh yeah, I know how to play that. No problem. I'm a game master myself. And in San Antonio, the kids are often not, right? They're not gamers in the same way that Seattle, we make gamers here. And Critical Core is still able, we can teach the game, play the game, process the game in 90 minutes. We can do that with entirely in 90 minutes with someone who's never played an RPG before with Critical Core. And it's been a really special program. So we're hoping to get into more children's hospitals as we continue to evolve the program. Every hospital is different. So we've learned a lot in the San Antonio program, took a lot of that to Seattle. Seattle has a different population with different challenges and different needs. And so we've adapted to that. We've got some other hospitals that are hoping we can get there too. We just need to make sure that we have the support to get into those hospitals.
Adam, I've got to ask you this because I know there's folks listening at home. It is the giving season. People are wanting to help. They're wanting to support. And you're a nonprofit. So can you tell us, for those folks who are at home saying, you know, that's touched my heart and I really want to help Critical Core get into more children's hospitals, where do I go? How do I provide that support to help you guys accomplish that mission for all of us here in the gaming community?
You can go to gametogrow.org/support, and we have our end of year campaigns are live right now for you to support. And that's the best way for us to get into more children's hospitals is that kind of support. And we accept direct donations. We, of course, accept scheduled donations. If you want to pace your donations out through the year, that's a great way to be there as well. We also accept cryptocurrency and stocks. So if you want to donate in any of those formats, we will accept it. Our mission is broad and our aim is high. We also would be very happy for people to set Amazon Smile with if they're making their Christmas purchases right now, their end of year gifts are happening through Amazon. You can go to smile.amazon.com and choose Game to Grow as your charity of choice there as well. Every little bit goes a long way.
I'll also say, getting the word out really means a lot, not only about, the end of year giving campaign, which of course you can tell your friends and family about, encourage them to donate as well. But also when you talk about games and you help include Game to Grow and Critical Core in the conversation as you're talking about games, you're also getting the word out to more people. A huge part of our mission is encouraging people to game in like a more positive way, game with sometimes a little bit more intention, but sometimes just a positivity that they're bringing into their lives and into the gaming table that they're playing at. And we encourage you to bring that stuff up, bring up the positivity, let them know where you heard about it, because that helps get our organization out there as well and gets more people pointed in the direction so we can continue to do our mission and bring good into the world through games.
And you guys mentioned that you are using online gaming to connect not only children in hospitals, but also with gamers around the world to use Critical Core. And myself, I've been a dungeon master on Roll20 now since 2013. So I love virtual tabletop. I love being able to game with people in New Zealand and Germany and Canada and Brazil all at the same time and gather around that table. You guys have something in the works right now with Roll20. Can you tell us more about it?
So Roll20 has been just absolutely wonderful to work with. We got a chance to talk with them and tell them about the mission and Game to Grow and the ideas behind Critical Core. And they were so excited to work with us along with Drive-Thru RPG as well. And so we're working with both, all one organization now. We're putting Critical Core as a virtual tabletop on the Roll20. That is available right now for pre-order. And we'll be coming out in early next year. I'm just so excited to get it into even more platforms, even more opportunities. So much of the mission of Critical Core as a product is to introduce people into this philosophy and introduce people into games if they aren't familiar with them, and to get it out into more places and into more hands. And so for us, Critical Core is a way to help game better.
Don't just game.
Game to Grow.
Adam, I can't thank you enough for what you are doing for the gaming community, how you are helping families and children through tabletop role-playing games, and now spreading to virtual tabletops. The potential and growth of your organization is amazing. I hope more people get involved. I hope more people support. I hope more people get a copy of this beautiful tool and game, Critical Core, that I just absolutely love.
Thanks so much for having us. It was a real joy.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Raised on D&D Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow on all your favorite apps and social media.